The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
You're hearing The Bill Myers Show on Southern Oregon's home for conservative talk. Mornings on KMED and 99.3 KBXG. Call Bill at 770-5633. That's 770-KMED. Here's Bill Myers.
And here is also Mr. Outdoors Greg Roberts at RogueWeather.com. I don't know if you're going to hit the slopes today with it being opening day at Mount Ashland or not. What do you say? Welcome back.
No, I'm taking a pass on this whole first weekend because I'll put it in two words: mob scene.
Oh yeah,
it's just going to be crazy. Of course, today the opening is official, but it's only for season pass holders. So if you don't have a season's pass, if you're going to be buying a lift ticket to get up on the slopes, you've got to wait until tomorrow. Today is reserved just for season's pass holders, and we're starting to see more and more ski areas across the country do this. Mount Bachelor did this 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago now, when they opened up. Their first weekend of operation was for pass holders only, and then they went general public their second weekend of operation, and of course now they're in daily. So Mount Ashland's doing kind of a similar thing. It's just today. And then tomorrow kicks off really the season for the general public. We have that posted, by the way, the schedule of operation over on the Ski Report page at Rogue Weather. It will be obviously weekend only for these first two weekends, and then they will jump to daily operation for the soon to arrive, and it still blows my mind, soon to arrive Christmas vacation period, which of course includes New Year's. And because of where New Year's is falling on Wednesday, which of course Christmas does too, but with New Year's falling on Wednesday, there's going to be that extended period of time where kids are going to be out of school. They'll be in operation. So, yeah, I'm expecting a mob scene, and it's also going to get pretty congested up there on the mountain because I think most people are aware on November 8th, they had a tree come down and hit a lift tower on Ariel Chair.
Oh, that's right.
Ariel is not going to be in operation here as they start the season. They intend to get it going as fast as they can. But no aerial is definitely going to lead to longer lift lines at Comer and Windsor.
Okay, I'm going to ask what may be a dumb question. Is it because of the Forest Service? That's Forest Service land, ultimately, right? Leased?
Right.
Is it one of those things where you can't do anything to preemptively stop a tree, Mother Nature's tree, from destroying a lift tower?
I don't think so. I mean, I've certainly seen other ski areas on Forest Service land around the western U.S. that they've done hazard tree mitigation work and taken out trees that are a hazard, but sometimes you don't know a tree is necessarily a hazard tree until, well, unfortunately, it falls.
And yeah, this one, all right. Okay.
This one couldn't have picked maybe a worse spot to fall because it did strike the lift tower. How much damage has been done to that lift tower? Just don't know. But if it's substantial, here's the other bad news about the chairlifts, especially Windsor and Ariel on Mount Ashland. They're older chairs to begin with. Windsor and Ariel definitely would be creaky ARP level senior citizens. Finding the parts for those is getting more and more difficult by the day.
Interesting.
So if they have to do something extensive in the way of repair there.
Yeah, they might just have to replace, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's going to be a long period of time trying to locate. Basically, if they need to replace the whole tower, including the footing, and that's the other thing I don't know if they've been able to do. I don't know if they've been able to get an excavator out there and dig out the footing on the tower, meaning the concrete anchor that lift tower is on.
And I would imagine a lot of this you're not going to be doing in this kind of weather, this time of year.
Well, Yeah,
right?
and you know, but if you're going to assess how sound that lift tower is, you got to do it literally from ground up. You've got to be able to assess every single part of it, and then you have to determine what can we maybe fix, what are we looking at a total replacement. They're still, obviously, they're very optimistic. They're stating we want to have Ariel up and running at some point this season, and that's the goal. And until it gets proven that that can't happen, that's what we're going to expect to see happen one way or the other here.
All right. All right. We'll set that aside. Another, we just don't know, you know, at this point in time. But, yeah, you know me. I'm not a skier. I tend to look at skiing as a sport that has an ambulance with my name stenciled on it on the side waiting at the bottom for me. Okay. Just
And lots of people feel that way. And in defense of the sport, I'm going to say this. When you're really, when you accomplish it and you become very proficient at skiing, and I'm not even talking about getting to the level I was as a racer and a true, you know, ski every inch of a mountain kind of guy, but just when you get proficient at it and the skiing, almost the turns seem to happen almost by themselves, there's a magical quality to it. And then there's just being out. And what you see.
It's beautiful. I understand the appeal. It's just like, no thank you for me, though. That's all I'm getting at. Mr. Outdoors, Greg Roberts at RogueWeather.com. All right. Rain is going to come this weekend, though, from the looks of it. In the valley, pretty heavy? Is there just kind of showery sort of thing? Huh?
No, what do you think? No. Yeah, this is real light, and it's also got a lot of bust potential. The good thing about it is, we do have fog that's building back in the valley right now. Yesterday, we had that weak front that went through, popped the inversion enough to get the fog out of here. It did produce some light showers down in Northern California, especially over the Coast Range. But then, of course, yesterday afternoon turned out to be a very nice sunny day. All the stuff that I see coming in the next week, if it's going to produce any precipitation, it's going to be real light. And then the key word there is if. But the heavier stuff to come, that's a different kettle of fish altogether. And I was looking at, you know, some rainfall projections.
Yeah. What's the timeline for the heavier stuff? What are you saying?
Yeah. Well, the timeline for the heavier stuff is basically going to be week after next, arriving just in time to do two things. Give us more significant snow in the mountains, which obviously will mean definitely going to be seeing rain here in the valley. And for the ski areas, going to be getting another big shot of snow just ahead of and during that Christmas vacation period that is so critical.
And, of course, that would be causing a few headaches, I would imagine, for some travelers, too. That would be past level stuff.
Without any question.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, without any question there.
Okay. Well, good to know here. Let me grab a call here for you, Mr. Outdoors. I think we have someone who wants to talk with you. Hi, good morning. This is Bill, and you're on with Greg.
Hey,
who's this?
Mr. Outdoors, this is Brad. I've got an insight that can help you with your forecasting.
Uh-oh. Okay, no, lay it on me.
I know when it's going to be a hard winter, and how I know.
What's that?
Years ago, I was going to Lakeview. I stopped in a little town called Beatty. There's a little mini market there, and I got a can of pop. Two Indians were sitting on a bench, and it was about this time of year. And I asked them, "Are you guys Modocs?" He says, "Yeah." And I says, "Hey, I know you guys have an insight. How do you guys know when it's going to be a hard winter?" And this is where it's powerful. He says, when a bunch of white guys are cutting firewood, it's going to get ugly.
Oh, I knew it.
You knew it was coming. I just, you know, I felt generous this morning.
I knew it was coming. It's like, all right, where are we going?
Well, you know, I never knew. Brad, thank you. We could always use a comedic break. Sometime. I'm just glad he didn't call during the D.C. swamp update. There are times, you know, timing is always important.
That was definitely one of those rim shot cymbal hit, all right, kind of things.
All right. Now then, now, as far as the serious stuff, though, yesterday, did you feel, yesterday's quake at all? Because I didn't feel the thing. I was in a home improvement store, and I was looking at the racks, and my phone explodes. Everybody else's phone explodes.
Yep.
And it didn't have the U.S. Geological Survey did not have a lot of information on that. And I think that's something that would be nice to have that
fixed. Well, here's
fixed,
what's funny. I don't know what alert you're getting from USGS. I'm getting, I guess, then a higher level alert. The first alert I got on my phone started going off seconds before Oregon Office of Emergency Management notification hit, which the guy I was having a meeting with, his phone lit up when that one hit too. But I had enough of my look at my phone before the OEM message to know from USGS it had a preliminary 6.9,
right,
and it was offshore of Eureka, and I'm going, oh, triple point, and then it got inundated.
Okay, so where did you get that notification from? What was that from? Because the one I got would just seem to be the standard thing that just takes over your phone whether you want it to be or not. And I still can't tell you what it is because I can't go back and look at it now. Yeah?
Yeah. No, you sign up, you can get different level notifications from USGS on their site. So I went to the one that, most of the geologists are going to use to get a heads up when there's an earthquake or a volcanic eruption, things like that. That worked well. And I got to tell you, that actually doesn't go off every single time there's, an earthquake. Because if it did that, my phone would go off dozens of times a day. But it definitely goes off on major events. So I'm looking at that, and I'm starting to plot where it was. I'm going, 6.9, that's a mover. And then the OEM stuff started hitting. And so it took me a minute to get back to the USGS.
And that must have been what I was getting, probably the office. And then we had the EAS going off because National Weather Service down at the in the broadcast world sent out a tsunami warning for Jackson County, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Now, and I got to explain how that works because
I think I know, but go ahead.
Yesterday, wanting to know, there's a reason that the EAS alert goes off for Jackson County for TV. It's not supposed to go off for radio, but for TV, here's the reason. The Medford TV stations serve the coastal areas as well.
Right.
So the way they've set up the tsunami alert system, we're going to have tsunami alerts, warnings, whatever. All of that's going to go off here in Medford, not because Medford's in any risk, but because they're trying to reach the coast. And in the days before cable and satellite TV really got built out and however people get their TV reception at the coast now, KOBI especially invested a lot of money in repeaters to get them in over in the coast.
Yeah, and I understand that. And I figured that's what was going on. But I also don't mind that. I really don't mind that they fired off EAS on the radio stations because, we travel a lot of places. People have loved ones out there on the coast. If something's booming and sliding and we're having bump and thumps everywhere and the possibility of tsunamis and you have people that are driving in and out of our area going out to the coast, it's there all the time. It's all right. I was fine with that. What has concerned me, though, has been, this push to put everything into an Everbridge. The Everbridge software kind of thing in which, you didn't sign up for this particular zone, so you don't need to know about this this kind of thing. So everybody's in the dark unless,
You got Everbridge and Genesis now doing the same exact things and the zone things. But in this case, with the earthquake situation and then the tsunami, that all kind of gets overridden because then they break it down into bigger regional zones, and they start firing alerts into any of the zones that could have the impact from the quake or could have the impact from the tsunami or both. And that's exactly what we witnessed yesterday because OEM, Oregon's Office of Emergency Management, immediately started firing. And if you remember what happened when we did the great shakeout, where they test their system to see how prepared they are. This was an extension in a real deal of what that was. I didn't get a notification from Jackson County on this.
No, neither did I.
My notifications came from USGS and came from Oregon Office Emergency Management.
Yeah, and that's what I got too. But like I said, not a lot of information at first on that. But that's all right. We figured it out. I would rather, you know, I would rather get that and then say, okay, where is this actually going on? Because yeah, you're right. If the earthquake's actually hitting directly here, we know it, right? We've already known it before.
Before the alert went off.
Yeah, exactly. But
And that's what I was telling my client. We happened to be meeting in an establishment that had pool tables, and he's going, this is saying we need to take cover and duck.
Yeah, and get under the pool table, right?
I said, if we truly needed to do that, we'd already be under those pool tables.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I was looking at this, too. So I'm just glad that, first off, I'm really glad. In fact, maybe you could explain the three-point aspect of this in a moment as we wrap, okay? But you know, the thing is, had this been a vertical up and down kind of earthquake rather than a horizontal slipping kind of earthquake, which is what it was, we would have been talking about a tsunami likely because the up and down ones are the ones that tend to be the ones that just terrify us, you know?
They're known as upthrust or displacement quakes. This was strike slip. And again, when I knew it was in what we call the triple point out there off Humboldt County, where you got the three plates that come together and they're bumping and grinding against each other, in the live session on Rogue Weather's Facebook page last night, I said, well, okay, I'm going to put this in terms everybody understands. This was a pressure release, and Mother Nature kind of popped a zit, and that pressure release is what created the earthquake. But these plates are grinding against each other in more of a lateral motion. It's not a subduction upthrust motion like what we would eventually see with the big one happening, where the smaller Juan de Fuca Gorda plate is diving and going underneath the heavier North American plate. When you get that upthrust and the kind of displacement we expect to see there, think Indonesia, Christmas Day, earthquake, tsunami event. Think Alaska, 1964, Good Friday. That's the kind of thing that we will be talking about.
Yeah, was that what happened when Crescent City got nailed in 1964, in reaction to that, right?
Yeah, and when the big one happens, our Cascadia event happens, it's going to spawn Pacific Basin-wide tsunamis. We could see tsunamis hitting basically everywhere on the Pacific, Hawaii, up to Alaska, over to Korea, Japan, Kamchatka Peninsula, and Russia. We've got record of them doing that with Cascadia events, but Fukushima, 2011.
Yeah.
We had tsunamis from that reach our shores over here, and it did some real serious damage in the boat basin in Brookings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thousands of miles away. Isn't that amazing, the power of the water in those waves? That's just amazing stuff. Really is.
Now, was there even really a tsunami generated by yesterday's event? Well, I was looking, and prior to doing my live video, the only thing I found was a 3.5-inch water rise, but then found out they did record 6.5-inch water rise in Crescent City, and then everybody goes, oh, 3.5, 6.5, big deal. Yeah, except this is the ocean, and this is moving with force, and water is a huge force. So even though 3.5 or 6.5 doesn't sound that powerful to you, in reality, that would have the potential to cause some damage, move boats around in boat basins, move docks around. It could do that kind of thing. So, you know, no. Did it generate a big one? No, because it wasn't the kind of earthquake that would. Did it generate a small one? Definitely appeared to.
All right. Mr. Outdoors, we appreciate the take. Have a great weekend. We'll talk again next Friday for sure. And hopefully, we have no more of Mother Earth popping zits this weekend, okay? Stays quiet.
People panic. There were people posting all over social media that, get ready, the big one's going to happen. And I'm like, no, go look at the record in California. Look at the history of 7.0 earthquakes in this area on the triple point off of Humboldt. There's been plenty of them, and two big ones I vividly remember, 1980 and 1995, and we didn't get the big one behind either of those, and we're not likely to get the big one here because this was a totally different thing and a totally different mechanism.
Yeah, in a different area there, too. I know that the last one that I remember feeling, though, was that 1993 Klamath Falls quake in which the man from Phoenix ended up dying when the boulder smacked him on Highway 97. And there was a woman who died in Cave Falls from a heart attack, you know, during that one. Mm-hmm. And I ended up covering, my daughter was only a few months old. I covered her body on the bed as we were trying, you know, shaking in the apartment that we were living in, you know, at that time. And that was, how long, do you remember how long the shaking was? Because I could swear, you know what it's like in your own mind, it went on for 2 minutes, but you know, it's probably like 10 seconds. I don't know.
Seconds turn into hours and those kind of things. I believe the severe shaking on that was probably around 30 seconds, and then total shaking as you're building and then decreasing out of the wave, probably somewhere a little over a minute.
Yeah.
But I will tell you this, the biggest impact of that Klamath quake everywhere was the radical changing of the seismic levels and then the codes on how you build everything from homes to multi-story buildings to highway overpasses.
Yeah, putting in more shear walls than we used to do, right? That kind of thing, right? That kind of, makes a lot of sense. All right, Mr. Outdoors, have a good weekend. Go back to your day job. We'll talk to you Friday, okay?
I'll get back to that. Thanks, Bill.
Thanks, Greg. Greg Roberts over at RogueWeather.com. Outdoor report every Friday morning at about this time, and it's sponsored by Oregon Truck and Auto Authority on Airway Drive in Medford. We appreciate their sponsorship on this, too. And we'll check the rest of the news here in just a moment. And I think we may have let me check my files. We might do a Diner 62 quiz a little bit. We'll work on that. I'll get back to you, okay?
When you hire a contractor, the last worry you should have is, are they capable enough to handle the job? A well drilling contractor is no different, especially with tough drilling conditions Southern Oregon can encompass. Clouser Drilling invests in capable machinery, tooling, and personnel equipped to handle these conditions. They operate 4 modern rotary drill rigs with capabilities from air rotary, mud rotary, and drill and drive casing advancement systems. Combine this with over 50 years and thousands of wells drilled, and worry no more. Contact Clouser Drilling or visit clouserdrilling.com.
The 33rd Annual Safeway Providence Festival of Trees is back, thanks to the generous support of our sponsors. Immerse yourself in the magic of the season as you walk through a holiday wonderland. Tour breathtaking trees that awe and inspire. Enjoy holiday performances from local groups. Take a free photo with Santa and stop by Teddy Bear Hospital. Safeway Providence Festival of Trees, benefiting the Providence Community Health Foundation, Saturday, December 7th and Sunday, December 8th, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. both days at the Medford Armory.
One of each K4 VIN 016551 MSRP 24145 Telluride VIN 576420 MSRP 43330 5982 due 10K miles per year, zero security deposit, all incentives and discounts to dealer plus tax, title, license, 150 registration processing fee. Trading in a vehicle will not eliminate your debt. Negative equity applied to new loan balance ends 1-2-25.
Get the gift you really want. It's the holiday trade-up during the season of new traditions at Kia Medford. Upgrade your old sleigh, then save on our huge selection of brand new Kias. Trade up to the all-new 2025 Kia K4 LXS, just $169 a month lease. Or a new 2025 Kia Telluride S all-wheel drive, only $229 a month lease, both for 24 months. Plus, once we make a deal at Kia Medford, we'll pay off your trade no matter how much you owe. Need credit? Go to KiaMedford.com to get pre-approved in less than 30 seconds with no effect on your credit score. Hurry in and trade up to a K4, $169 a month, or Telluride, $229 a month at Kia Medford. Click KiaMedford.com.
If you don't plan on cooking tonight, plan on dining at Freddy's Diner. Friday and Saturday nights, Freddy's features their hickory smoked prime rib. Plus, there's everyday favorites like New York steak, smoked beef brisket, Carolina chicken, pressure fried chicken, hand-dipped beer battered salmon or cod, and more. The menu is designed to please everyone in the family. Easy takeout, too. And stick around on Friday nights for karaoke at 9 p.m. Freddy's is a great place to meet friends or make some. Freddy's Diner in Old Town Eagle Point.
News Talk 106.3 KMED. You're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
By the way, Freddy's smoked prime rib is really good stuff. If you've never tried that, I got to tell you, pretty darn good stuff. Great way to spend a Friday night, that is for sure. It's 20 before 8. We haven't had a dad joke of the day for a day or two. You know, we just need to kind of keep life in perspective, right? And by the way, dad jokes of the day are sponsored by Two Dogs Fabricating. Two Dogs Fabricating on Bryan Way off Sage Road in Medford. They have a new line of Horizon trailers there at Two Dogs, and it's available in 10, 12, 14, 20-foot lengths. These are beefy trailers, sharp-looking all black or two-tone black and gray and black and tan. And the other thing about this is that they're the kind of place that when you need fabricating, you need a hitch repair, you need all sorts of other things done with metal, you want to talk with Two Dogs Fabricating, all right? Doug Dean, of course, is our resident jokester out of Rogue River. He says, hey, Bill, what do you call a dinosaur who crashes his car? Tyrannosaurus Rex. All right. Doug, keep it going. Keep it coming, all right? By the way, if you'd like your dad joke submitted, go to twodogsfab.com, and maybe we can do it on the show some this morning. Thanks for the smile, Doug.
News brought to you by Millett Construction, specializing in foundation repair and replacement. Get on solid ground. Visit MillettConstruction.com.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. Authorities in Josephine County are trying to find a missing 16-year-old girl, Carrie Knox. She was last seen November 30th in the Redwood Avenue area of Grants Pass. She was wearing red sweatpants, a black hoodie, and black shoes. She's described as a white female, 5'10", about 145 pounds, with blonde hair and blue eyes. Nearly 5,000 healthcare workers at 13 Providence hospitals and clinics in Oregon, including Medford, have approved a strike if they aren't able to reach an agreement on a contract. Negotiations have been underway for more than a year. If a strike is called, it would be the largest health care strike in Oregon history. A tsunami warning closed beaches all along the Oregon coast Thursday morning after a 7.0 earthquake in Northern California. The warning was rescinded at noon, but the Oregon Parks Department kept all state beaches closed till 3 p.m. Other than panic, no damage was reported in Oregon coastal communities. Bill London, KMED.
James Taylor released the single Fire and Rain in August of 1970, and it quickly reached number 3 on the Billboard Hot 100. This song is a reminder that summer heat and winter moisture can make the ground under your house foundation unstable. With Millett Construction, you've got a friend that can level your house and fix the water issue that caused the damage. Get on solid ground. Millett Construction is your foundation handyman. Visit MillettConstruction.com. CCB number 32787.
Very good. All right. Let's do the Diner 62 Real American Quiz here in a couple of minutes. You good with that? I hope so. All right. And the way this works is that you call and you answer a great historical question, and then I possibly give you or award you a $20 gift certificate. It's that simple. It's multiple choice. And actually, it's kind of rock and roll in 1960s violent history is what we're getting on right now. Kind of like post-Woodstock. I'll just give you a little hint, you know, about that kind of stuff. But over at Diner 62, a couple of pork chops, eggs, or 8-ounce New York steak and eggs on special right now and on the weekends. And remember, today, Clam Chowder Friday. So many good things to enjoy. Diner 62, just south of White City. 770-5633. If you haven't won it in the last 60 days, you could win that next.
Hi, it's Lisa with Kelly's Automotive Service wishing you and your family a safe and joyous Christmas season. And on behalf of everyone at Kelly's, I'd like to offer a simple reminder about God's greatest gift to humanity, John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year from all of us at Kelly's Automotive Service in Grants Pass and Medford, where we service your vehicle, but take care of you.
Rev up your engines, folks. American Wrencher Garage is putting on the brakes this season, ending the high cost of vehicle repairs with their exclusive offer. Discounted Oregon e-deal certificates good for a whopping $75 off any service. Whether it's a routine checkup, oil change, brake repair, or full-on engine overhaul, trust the expert technicians to get the job done right. Visit OregonEDeals.com to snag your discounted certificate. Drive in. Save big. American Wrencher Garage, across from Elmer's on Biddle.
Matt here with an urgent message from the Josephine County Republican Party. Similar to what President Trump experienced, politically motivated citizens are using lawfare and misinformation in an attempt to recall Commissioner John West, one of our most fiscally conservative commissioners of all time. Win or lose, this misguided recall will waste 60,000 of our hard-earned taxpayer dollars. When you receive your recall ballot, vote no on this political attack and drop it at the county courthouse, the Republican Party headquarters, or as a last resort in the mail. Your action is urgently needed. If those opposed do not submit ballots, one of our most effective commissioners will be recalled. Stop the John West derangement syndrome. The Josephine County Republican Party urges you to counter this injustice by voting no and turning in your ballot by December 17th. Thank you. Paid for by Josephine County Republican Central Committee, PAC 319.
Hi, I'm Matt Stone, owner of Stone Heating and Air, and I'm on 106.3 KMED.
Diner 62 Real American Quiz, and remember, they also have hot open face sandwich specials going on right now. Hot roast sandwich, hot turkey sandwich, good stuff. Under my thumb. Today, a little bit of Rolling Stone history. Once had me down. This was the song the Stones were playing, the Altamont Festival, when... Well, the stabbing happened. Let me first off, bring on Carol. Carol's going to be the first potential either winner or victim of the Diner 62 quiz. Hello, Carol. How you doing?
Good morning.
All right. So it was today in 1969, Hell's Angels biker named Alan Passero stabbed to death an 18-year-old concert attendee, Meredith Hunter, during a set by the Rolling Stones at the Altamont Music Festival. It was a brand new festival in Northern California. And the Stones thought this up, figured be like a West Coast equivalent of Woodstock. But Altamont was kind of like, hurry up and put a show on, I guess. But it was only on the Thursday prior that organizers settled on Altamont Speedway for a free concert. It was then scheduled to include Santana, Jefferson Airplane, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Grateful Dead, all supporting the Stones. And the event would also include several dozen members of the Hell's Angels motorcycle gang acting as security. And they were given $500 worth of beer in exchange for being the guards. And this was a gratuity, kind of like a thanks. So needless to say, though, we had this this young woman stabbed to death. So the question is, though, how many years in prison was Passero, the Hell's Angel gang member, sentenced to for the stabbing? Was it 0? Was it 6? Was it 12? Was it 24? Or was it 36 to life? It's one of those 5. Alan Passero, how many years did he have to serve in prison for this?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Hey, you know, I actually guessed it right, but, you know, it's, you know, I don't know.
Well, did she die or no?
Stabbed to death. I would say she died, yes.
Oh, yikes.
Okay. So we have a death. We have a Hell's Angels, ostensibly probably drunk security. What do you say? 0, 6, 12, 24, or 36 months to life? What do you say?
24.
I'm sorry, Carol. I was pulling for you. All right. She's a good sport, though. Let me go to Lauren. Hello, Lauren.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Now, knowing your background here as a man of the cloth, I'm sure you were probably there, you know, drunk and knee-deep in gin and hookers there, 1969. You were probably there. So it wasn't...
No. Anyway, go ahead.
Wasn't you. Okay. I'm having fun with you. You know that. 0, 6, 12, or 36 to life. How many years did Passero get sentenced to prison for?
I'm going to go with 0.
You're going to go with 0. It's a good day for you.
You're a winner!
You're really good.
Yeah!
And this
thank you.
Yeah, and this wasn't even a George Soros prosecutor at this time. Yeah, what happened though is Hunter approached the stage driven off by members of the Hell's Angels Motorcycle Club who were providing surgery, all right, or security rather.
Security, yeah.
And had agreed to prevent members of the audience from getting up on the stage.
Uh-huh.
And by the way, Meredith Hunter, was actually a man. I forgot to mention that part, right? Meredith Hunter was a man, subsequently went back to the stage, drew a gun, and then was stabbed and beaten to death by Hell's Angels member Alan Passero while the Stones were playing Under My Thumb, which is why I opened it up with that. Passero was charged with murder, tried in 1971, and after 17 days of testimony, an 8-man, 4-woman jury deliberated for about 12 and a half hours. Passero acquitted because of self-defense, and part of the defense was the killing was captured on video, so they at least had pretty good evidence on this. So That's what happened. Interesting story, and I never heard a whole lot about that, but interesting stuff. Hang on here, Lauren. We'll take care of you, and at least you get to eat this weekend over at Diner 62. By the way, a little side note, it was dark by the time that the Concerts Act before the Stones, Grateful Dead, was scheduled to go, but the Dead had left the venue because they were concerned for their safety when they learned that Jefferson Airplane singer Marty Balin had been knocked unconscious by one of the Hell's Angels in another melee during his band's performance. Crosby, Stills, and Nash, Stephen Stills, was reportedly stabbed in the leg with a sharpened bicycle spoke. Yikes. Now, this is post-Summer of Love, right? And unaware that someone had died, the Rolling Stones kept playing their set. No other incidents bringing an end to that day. There were an additional 3 accidental deaths and 4 live births. So as far as the Earth's population in the Rolling Stones concert that day, it was kind of a wash. 4 died and 4 were born. Interesting story. There you go. This is the Bill Meyer Show.
One of each K4 VIN 016551 MSRP 24145 Telluride VIN 576420 MSRP 40.
It's snowing and the wind, it is blowing, but I can weather the storm.
What is it about post-World War II songs that, Christmas songs, holiday songs, things like that, like, you know, Dean, Sinatra, all the rest of them. What is it about that era that holds up? I mean, that song was old when I was a kid. It was before I was born, 1961. You know, Dean Martin, Got My Love to Keep Me Warm, Holly Jolly Christmas, all the other kind of stuff, White Christmas by Bing, all the rest of it. And yet, that is still the gold standard, in my opinion. I don't know what it is. Part of me wonders if it is just as simple as this was like the peak of big America. Everybody else was destroyed, World War II. We're standing alone. We're building cars like crazy. We're building houses. Even look at the cars. You think of late 1950s, a 1959 Cadillac. You know those fins? That is a symbol of swagger, You got swagger. I don't know. Francine was here. It's not swagger, but you actually were at Altamont. 1971, we were just talking about that, the Rolling Stones concert.
Well, I was at Altamont, and I was...
No, hold on. Were you that drunk hippie chick doing the twirl out front,
Actually, I might have been a drunk hippie chick, but I wasn't doing the twirl.
You weren't doing the twirl. Good. All right. Just had to ask.
Oh, that's funny, Bill. That was a pretty interesting event. I used to be a huge Rolling Stones fan. And I was living in the San Fernando Valley, and I was working at a soldering circuit boards.
Oh yeah.
And I heard that the Rolling Stones were doing a free concert, north of San Francisco. And so when I got off work Friday night, I hitchhiked up to the freeway on ramp, hitched a ride to up to the Bay Area. I got a ride in a Volkswagen bus with a hammock strung across it, which I climbed into the hammock and slept the whole way up, rocking back and forth. It was
that is such a late 60s, early 70s American story, isn't it? That's
oh my God.
Classic,
yeah.
Well,
I told you yesterday, I was born in 1950. I was right there, right where you needed to be if you wanted to experience that. And boy, I did. It was a lot of fun.
Well, good for you. I'm glad you survived your ill-gotten youth there.
Bill, I think I was always... In spite of all of that, I think in my heart I was always more conservative, but I didn't realize it.
What was it? What was it in your mindset? I'm trying to remember what I was like as a 19-year-old. I'm sure I was an idiot.
Well, yeah, I mean, we all kind of were, But I mean, I'll never forget when during Vietnam, when all the hippies were at the airports, when the soldiers were coming home and they were spitting at them and calling them baby killers and stuff. I went into shock. I could not believe they could do that. I mean, there was something inside of me that knew that, like, no. So I think I've always been a conservative in spite of my hippie days. But I wanted to tell you about the Fillmore earthquake in the San Fernando Valley.
Okay.
Back in 1971. And I was in Topanga Canyon in a house on stilts on the side of a mountain. In a waterbed,
Oh, that could feel a little sketchy, huh?
And I'll tell you, I was sound asleep, and I started having this dream that, you know, in the cartoons how they have the Indians that do a, you know, they're running around in a circle going, woo, 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 woo,
yeah,
you know, like with Elmer Fudd in the middle or something like that. Well, I dreamt that there were a bunch of Indians on the roof doing that, you know, and I started to wake up, and I went, oh my God, the roof is coming down, and I started sliding down to the foot of the bed. I was going to lay on the floor because the big waterbed frame was going to save me from the roof beams. And my, you know, this is like still half asleep, and all of a sudden I'm wide awake, and I realize that there's no Indians on the roof; that it's an earthquake. And I mean, I'm telling you, I crawled back up in the bed, and I swear I got under the covers, and I just laid there, and I actually felt like believed that the house was going to go down, it was going to fall.
Yeah, well, you were on stilts. You talked about it being on stilts, right?
Yeah. And I was probably going to die. And I got very, very calm. It was the most unusual experience. I'll never forget it, you know, obviously, because here I am blabbing about it.
Yeah, I know. Well, I don't think that's all that unusual in some respects that, you know, I don't think death is hard. It's the dying process. Death in some ways, you know, I almost, you know, almost drowned a couple of times seriously, you know, in my life. And what ended up happening, it's amazing how peaceful some of that can be as you're thrashing around, though. And yet there's a calmness at a peace at the same time. Maybe this is, the spirit telling you, hey, everything's okay, you know, one way or the other. Or maybe it's just a stupid evolutionary thing so that if we're going to be eaten by a dinosaur, we don't suffer too badly. I don't know. But
I don't know either. But, you know, I remember feeling like, okay, I guess now I'm going to find out what that's all about.
Yep. Point well taken. Great story. And by the way, did the stilted building survive?
It did.
Okay.
Believe it or not, it survived.
All right. And now the other question here, we got to ask, since you were the hippie chick, who was in the bed with you? It's a waterbed. You know, come on.
Oh, and it was actually a gentleman whose name was Francis, so we were both friends.
Uh-huh. All right.
That was my boyfriend back then.
Gotta go.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Bye, Bill.
See, I knew it. There had to be. That's the backstory she didn't say anything about. 770-5633. Tom, how are you doing this morning? You promised that, I promised I'd get you back on. We want to talk a little bit about the exposure of the COVID fraud, and it's continuing to be exposed more and more and more, and it's out in the open, but it's surprisingly quiet out at the same time. Don't you find that interesting?
That contradiction, Bill, it's absolutely true. It's like, the alternative media has been on it ever since day one, but the mainstream, nothing to see, move along. But I wanted to point out to people, again, on lewrockwell.com, there's three articles today about COVID, and they have one by Eric Peters. You know, he goes on quite a rant about the mask, which is one of his things, and I say quite a bit about that. There's another one that talks about the study being released by the House Select Committee and its review of COVID pandemic and so forth. And from what I can see, it is both an expose and a cover up at the same time. At one point during the...
Is that kind of the limited hangout sort of thing, the way that federal government a lot of times, or government in general, will tend to look at it? We'll admit to some of this, but we don't really go the whole way down that rabbit hole.
That's exactly right. And what they do, they talk about the obvious things that people know about, like a mask didn't work, distancing didn't work, closing downs was excessive, you don't put sick people in rest homes and so forth. They admitted all that. But then they come out and say that millions were saved by the COVID vaccination, and they don't offer any real corroboration of that. And Steve Kirsch really goes into...
Oh, I know. Steve Kirsch has been doing yeoman's work on Substack on this one, just blowing it absolutely up. But yes, that's going to be the Warren Commission version of COVID.
Yeah,
millions were saved. Were saved. Okay.
Yeah, safe and effective. And What the real problem that I'm seeing right now is that we have a lot of sick people in this valley from the vaccinations, and also the the bioweapon COVID itself. So, but the doctors, the medical doctors, are not admitting it. They're not pretending not to see it and so forth. So there's a lot of sick people going to the doctors, and the doctors either knowingly or unknowingly are not helping them because they're not admitting what the cause is.
Well, some are. There are a few, but there aren't very many. Well, I'll give you an example. I have a nephew of mine who lives in Southern Oregon who has been diagnosed with some serious neurological issues and a particular disease. I forget the name of it, but a lot of problems working hard through it. No, but both he has two physicians who have officially on his record had said that this is vaccine damage. This is why he has these issues. He did not have these before. And two physicians. And he was forced to get the shot in order to keep his job. They would not keep him, and he had a family to support. And something tells me there's a lot of people like my nephew here in Southern Oregon.
Yeah, there's a lawsuit waiting. And last night on Ground Zero, they had a couple people they were interviewing, and they were talking about the prion problem with that where the misfolded proteins really get in, give you mad cow disease.
Oh, the Creutzfeldt-Jacob syndrome. Yeah, I heard a little bit of that as I was falling asleep, and I was trying to actually fall asleep, and so I needed to fall asleep, so I had to turn him off.
Too.
You know,
me too. That's where I was.
At that point, I was kind of thinking, all right, what are the prions doing in my brain there? Point well taken, and I appreciate your thoughtfulness as always, Tom.